Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny, joined by my co-host, Brian. And today, guys, we are giving you our recap to the 2022 NBA season. Brian, can you believe that it is finally wrapped up? It just flew by, to be quite honest. Yeah, man, crazy finals. We're going to quickly go over them, guys. We had the Golden State Warriors besting the Boston Celtics in six games. Like yours truly predicted. Brian, what were some of your takeaways from the NBA Finals, like Game 6 in particular?
I would say that the championship and playoff experience of the Golden State Warriors really stood out in this series, kind of like we predicted it would, Dan. I think the Celtics throughout the series and in Game 6, just too many unforced errors, self-inflicted wounds. It really felt like this series kind of turned the tide in Game 4 when the Golden State won that really, really pivotal Game 4 to tie things up. It felt like after that, it didn't feel like Boston was in it anymore. They didn't really have an answer for Steph at all throughout the series. He obviously had one bad game, but pretty much went off with a well-deserved finals MVP there. And I mean, how can we not talk about Jason Tatum and that game six performance at home? I mean, I know you were disappointed, Dan. I was disappointed. I think we all were with that performance. I was expecting a lot more from him, just from an effort perspective. It just, you know, it's one thing if your shot's not falling, but it just felt like he continued to settle like he did in the beginning of the series. And he just refused to really use his size. And he just kind of kept looking for fouls. And obviously, it's just not championship winning basketball. After some of those games that he had against Miami and Milwaukee earlier in the playoffs and even Brooklyn, I was really, really disappointed with Tatum more than anything in that game six.
I'd like to attest that to, you know, kind of what happened to LeBron in the 2011 finals versus Dallas. I think that Tatum was just in his own head. I mean, I'm probably the biggest of the two that just doesn't have as much faith in Tatum, but I do cut him some slack, it being his first finals and him just kind of getting it out of the way, getting the jitters out of the way. He now knows where he has to improve and how he has to come back. I think we're also just not giving the Harrison Barnes player a role this year with Andrew Wiggins, like his just due respect, man. They really figured it out, having a 3-and-D wing player that can kind of just lock up the other team's star. That's what Andrew Wiggins did. So Wiggins, props to him. He definitely got in Tatum's head. And ultimately, just Boston was pretty defeated. Like they were committing too many unforced turnovers to your earlier point. And, you know, the Warriors were going to capitalize on it, something that unfortunately the Heat could not do. But Brian, what are your thoughts with Steph Curry, you know, finally getting that elusive finals MVP under his belt?
So there's a lot of hearsay with Steph Curry, obviously, in light of the recent, you know, new championship and all that. Here's what we do know, Dan, without a shadow of doubt about Steph. He's arguably the greatest shooter of all time. Four rings, of which most of them, all of them have come within the last eight seasons. And he still has time to get another, possibly surpass LeBron, tie Kobe. He's changed the game of basketball at every level. To me, he has got to be in the conversation now as a top 10 player in NBA history, or at least in the conversation. For those of you who don't have him maybe in your top 10, I think he's got to be at least borderline, maybe like 11 or 12. This guy's a four-time champion. And for those of you who like to discount the KD run, he's done it twice without KD now. It's not like he needs KD. I would argue on the opposite end, KD needs Curry because he hasn't done it without him or without the Warriors. And then you add on the rest of his resume, eight-time All-NBA, half of those being four first-team selections. He's got two regular season MVPs. He's a two-time scoring leader, obviously now finals MVP. And don't get me started with the three-point accomplishments because he pretty much has one of everything in that regard. My biggest knock against Steph's legacy, Dan, and I think this is what most people would argue, is probably his lack of all-NBA defensive teams. He's never really made a big impact on that side of the basketball. Although in doing some research on some of his career accolades, I actually found out that he led the NBA in steals in 2016. So even despite having no all-NBA defensive teams on his resume there, he still was able to lead the NBA in steals for a full season. And then obviously the argument of half his rings came with KD. But I think outside of that, Steph Curry is obviously a generational type talent. I think there's no avoiding that at that point. And honestly, I mean, even though the NBA is pretty well balanced, it would not surprise me if the Warriors were right back here next year with him, as long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I think that's the general general consensus is that they're the favorites to make it back to the finals next year. And I don't know if they have NBA title favorites, but definitely to make it back to the finals. What I will say about Steph is he's cracked my top 10. There's no disputing it at this point. He is. I haven't done the math for my top 10, but he's definitely in there, maybe towards the latter half of the top 10. But he definitely has to kick someone out. That also being said, something I have focused on, Brian, and I kind of want to have this subject come up in terms of this era, this generation, you know, the last, let's say, 20 years in the NBA, where would you rank Steph Curry? Because for me, like 2000 onward, Steph Curry is easily number two behind LeBron James.
Ooh, that's tough. If you ask me last 10 years, I think it's no question. But to go back 20 years, I mean, you also have to take into consideration Tim Duncan and those Spurs runs. Kobe obviously won multiple championships throughout that time. He won back-to-back finals MVPs. I'd say if Steph can get a back-to-back in there with a finals MVP back-to-back as well, for good measure, I think you can make the argument from the beginning of 2000 to now, he would be number two. But I think I wouldn't want to disrespect Tim Duncan, even Shaq, Kobe. I think those three names to me kind of stand out, but I do think he's in the conversation with all those three plus LeBron and Curry, like those five guys to me from 2000 to today, those are the five standout players. Like it's those five and then everybody else as far as like legacy goes.
Yeah, you're right. I meant to say top 10 because like when you go 20 years, you definitely have to factor in the all-timers like with Tim Duncan, Kobe, and Shaq. So last 10 years for sure.
Yeah, 10 years. Yeah, absolutely. That says a lot because, you know, Kevin Durant has been. I was just
about to say that. Like, what happens to KD now? You know, does he fall out of your top 10? Did you have him in your top 10? And if so, does he fall out?
Nah, he's just outside the top 10 for me. I think the combination of winning one playoff series over the last 3 years hurts his legacy. There's just no question about it. Part of that is because of who he chose as a teammate, but that comes with the territory. And I think the fact that Golden State kind of went back post KD and won without him against the number one defense in the league, it's an impressive championship without him. I read on Twitter, actually, Dan, that people were basically saying that KD, all he did was fill the Harrison Barnes, Andrew Wiggins role for a couple years with Golden State. I was like, well, he's definitely a really, really good elevated version of that. But I thought that was an interesting comparison that he just kind of fit into that role. And once he's gone, now they were able to find in a new guy who just kind of took on a lot of that responsibility that KD had when he was on the Warriors.
I mean, Warriors fans just do not like KD. I think that that's just such a disappointment. It's so sad that they don't appreciate him for all the hard work and all the passion that he brought towards the team. I mean, he walked away. I get it, but he definitely did help the team more than they helped him and like in his time at Golden State, in my opinion. Yeah. That being said, though, you know, I think that KD, he's got to prove it next year or, you know, in the following years that he can get it done without the Warriors. And that way it's going to be a much more closer argument to see if he can catch up to Steph for a second in terms of this era, last 10 years and player rankings.
Yeah, Steph's definitely got that over KD right now. And I think a lot of people with this new championship who ever didn't already have Steph above KD on their all-time list, I mean, you have to put Steph above him right now. I think there's no question.
I mean, there's some people that argue that Steph is the best player of this era.
I wouldn't go that far.
I agree with you, but I got into this. I think we were talking about it earlier. I got into this debate with like people on Twitter, and I was like, I can't have this argument. To me, it's no question. But everyone's kind of entitled to their own opinion and their whatever metrics they choose to rank players by. You know,
What I would say, though, and I agree, LeBron definitely has it. What I will say, though, if they win another, a back-to-back, and he gets finals MVP, and it's very similar to this year, the conversation, I don't want to say that Steph is going to surpass LeBron because
Right,
but it's definitely closer, and to me, it doesn't look good on LeBron because there's so many greats that really dominated their era. And while I do agree that during his prime, LeBron was an absolutely dominant force individually, we just didn't see it translate to as many championships as some of his peers. And that's, at the end of the day, I know he made 10 straight finals. I respect that accomplishment, but a lot of times guys are going to look at him potentially like a Jerry West in that aspect of he got super close, but just couldn't seal the deal in a lot of important moments. But, you know, again, four championships, still very respectful. Steph and he are tied, but the conversation will get a lot more interesting if Steph passes him with rings.
Yeah, and what I will say is that Steph is in a better position to win another championship than LeBron is currently.
He really is.
You know, that's something we don't want to get ahead of ourselves at this current moment. There's so many variables that clearly need to play themselves out. But, you know, early predictions, Steph is coming for LeBron's legacy right now as the greatest player of his, you know, of his generation.
Wouldn't that be something too, Dan, if we look back 5-10 years in the future and we talk about Steph Curry as the greatest player of this generation instead of LeBron James? I think that would be shocking.
Yeah, I mean, but that just goes to show the translation and the transformation of this game, right? And just how it evolved.
Yeah. Because
LeBron, Steph. I think LeBron would have flourished a lot more in the 90s with a more physical game. But he definitely adapted very well to like the 2000s and now the 3-point revolution. But you know, like it's just Steph played in the perfect era for his game. Like you can't knock a guy for just being there at the right time and capitalizing.
I agree. I don't think it's a surprise that a lot of LeBron's rings came when he had elite shooters surrounding him. That's the best roster construction you can really give a guy like that.
Yeah. Like again, LeBron is this generation's Magic. So throw him back in the 80s, 90s, when it's more physical, you know, a different style game. Who knows? Like, it definitely would have been a much more interesting debate. But that having been said, Brian, let's pivot to the other superstar, quote-unquote, in this NBA Finals. I'm just kidding. He definitely is a superstar, whether people want to give him that title or not. It's Jason Tatum. I think that this solidified... Remember when we did our top 10 rankings and I had... top 10, like my number 10 as kind of like a rotating door between Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum. Jimmy Butler just took that for me. Like without a doubt, he is number 10 because he was actually able to, it didn't translate to him winning, but he actually showed up and he was actually able to effectively lead his team. His team just wasn't very well built for capitalizing in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. Tatum had the perfect team built to take the NBA Finals. And he just couldn't lead them to victory. Like, he couldn't capitalize on that. I mean, let's look at it this way. If Tatum averages another 6 points for this series and just shoots a better field goal percentage, I think we might be seeing a different story at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. I think it's tough because I think you obviously have to take into consideration Tatum's most recent series and Butler's most recent series. If you take those two and you kind of extrapolate that, I would tell you no question Butler looks better. However, we also have to acknowledge the fact that Boston had a super impressive run to the finals. Now, I will say that his supporting cast definitely outplayed Butler's supporting cast, so I'm not going to get into the semantics of who's ahead. What I would say is while I took some time to think about this question, Dan, I think that it really helped me clear up my player rankings because I know I gave one a little while ago and I'd kind of just spewed it out. I didn't really do a ton of research into it. And I kind of did a little bit more research. So I wanted to list it and in order. And I think right now, this is the way I have it. It's number one is Giannis. Number two is Steph. Number three is KD. Number four is LeBron. Number five is Kawhi. Number six is Luka. Seven is Embiid. Eight is Jokic. And to be honest, those two are pretty interchangeable. I wouldn't hate you either way for having them one way or the other. And then there's everybody else. And who I kind of deem into that next tier is AD, Anthony Davis. And the only reason he's not higher is because he can't stay healthy. Damian Lillard, again, did not have a great year, but we know what he's capable of. I think he's right in that tier. Paul George, who, again, he's someone that I still think is slept on a lot. I still think when healthy, he can be a top 10 player in the league because of his two-way ability. Then you have Ja Morant because of his explosiveness and what we know he's capable of doing. And obviously, you take into consideration his potential. And then you have Tatum and Butler. Like, those That's, to me, that's the list right now. Those are the guys that are kind of fighting for that 9-10 spot. And I couldn't hate you for having any one of those guys in that 9-10 spot.
You have Ja Morant in that superstar tier list. That's,
I think he's, I don't
blame you, but like, damn,
they were a top two team in the West. They ran into the Warriors, and he obviously was hurt in that series. I don't know how much higher Jaw's going to get from here, though. Again, he really blew me away last season. I know a lot of you guys remembered I was very low on him coming into this year, but he blew me away with what he was able to do. I think that's a fair place to put him. I'm not saying he's 9 or 10. I'm just saying guys, I could see him being in that conversation with the rest of those guys.
It's a second tier. It's like,
yeah, exactly. But would you agree that after Jokic and Embiid, there is a little bit of a drop off?
Yeah, for sure. Like we're talking about all time, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers,
right?
1 through 8, and then we're talking about superstars in this league.
Exactly.
Today.
That's kind of how I feel. Like I need to see more from all those guys. And I know a lot of people. I had James Harden originally on that list. I know he's.
I knew you amended that.
I know. And that was one. And I'll be honest, like he's still capable of putting up monster numbers. But like you mentioned, it's tough with the playoff, the unbelievably rough playoff, big game moments that he struggled in. That's really what brings him down. Because talent wise, I think he's better than the other guys I listed. I think I would have him at 9. But when you take into consideration his lack of playoff success in big moments, that's what brings James Harden down for me.
I mean, I think you and I can both agree that in the playoffs, we expect more from our superstars and Hall of Famers.
Agreed.
It weighs heavily, right? Like,
agreed, for sure.
Regular season performances, they matter, but we don't take them into consideration as much. James Harden, his track record, it's just so poor. But Brian, let's get back to the topic we were just discussing with the NBA Finals. Obviously, Warriors are favorites to get back to the finals. I'm pretty sure that the Bucks have better odds to get to the finals than the Celtics, given the Chris Middleton factor. What do both the Celtics and the Warriors need to do in order to get back to the, like, moving forward to get back to the finals for next year?
So what I would say first with the Warriors, they just need to retain as much of their talent as possible. I know they got some expiring deals this summer. Kevon Looney might be gone, and he was a big-time hustle player throughout the playoffs for them. And even though they have a healthy James Wiseman potentially coming back next season, you still kind of need that insurance because he just has not proven to be reliable enough. So I could see them getting some more insurance at the big man position if they end up letting a guy like Looney walk. But man, they have Kuminga, they have Moody. Like, these are young players I think are just ready to ascend and take on more minutes in that rotation. I think the Warriors are really set up to make another run next year if they can keep, you know, pretty much stay healthy. Like I said, if I'm them, I'm just focused on retaining as much of that as I can. I think Jordan Poole is definitely going to be their biggest question mark long term. I could see him leaving to go get the bag with another team because I just don't think the Warriors are going to be able to afford or want to afford all of those guys. If it lines up and guys are willing to take pay cuts so Jordan Poole can stay, that's one thing, but that's going to be a lot of guys like Wiggins, Draymond's getting paid well, Clay, Steph. I mean, you can only keep so many guys. So I think he's probably the most likely to leave in the future. And as far as the Celtics, I wouldn't really change too much. They're a really young team still, all in all, with a young core. Maybe they need another consistent three-point shooter on the wing to kind of help spell Tatum and Brown. I know they played a lot of minutes in the finals, so maybe it's nice to have a guy that you can rely on to maybe get his, that also gives you some size to match up better with some of these teams that are a lot bigger in the East. Because let me tell you, Milwaukee's going to be healthy. If Milwaukee's healthy next year, that's going to be a super tough out. And I still believe that. So again, we'll see who they look to add. But I think if you're looking at the Golden State, it's retaining talent, maybe adding a backup center if you lose Kevon Looney. And then for the Celtics, getting another, maybe a two-way wing that can kind of come off the bench, maybe a veteran to kind of keep them composed when they seem to lose their momentum and they kind of go into those offensive blunders that they go into. I think those are the top two priorities for each team.
Yeah, and something to factor into this is the fact that both of these teams are pretty cash-strapped heading into next year because they have so many guys under contract for relatively large contracts. You know, key free agents that we have going into next year for Golden State. This year, obviously, Kevon Looney's up for a deal. I think, like you, he is probably gone. Golden State probably isn't going to pay him what a Charlotte could overpay him. So it just makes sense for them to look to other players, look at bringing possibly a JaVale McGee back or a player of that caliber, maybe even a Dwight Howard, who knows. And then in terms of Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole, they're in their last years of their contracts. Who knows, man? I mean, I think that they're both probably going to have to sacrifice in order to be retained. The math just, like, unless Golden State chooses to go into uncharted territories of luxury tax, right? But I doubt it. So both these guys, they're just going to have to make it work and probably take a pay cut or one of them leaves. And
in the question of that, Dan, I mean, I think you got to, if you're going to pay either one of those guys, you got to pay Wiggins, because I think he's closer to the ages of your big three, your Clay, your Draymond, and your Steph. I think he's more available to help you win now. I think, I don't want to say Jordan Poole's replaceable, because you're definitely going to feel his absence, but I mean, if you had to take one of the two, I think it's got to be Wiggins.
Wiggins is a harder player to replace, and exactly. I never thought I'd be saying that. But you know, it's like, yeah. Kuminga just hasn't shown that level yet. Neither has Moody. Whereas, yeah, Jordan Poole, he very much does what Steph does, right? So like, right. He is Steph Curry insurance. Whereas Wiggins, his insurance just isn't validated yet. And then with Boston, kind of like what you said. They just got to get like one or two pieces there. I'm curious to know if they're going to be able to keep their talent long term, though. I mean, if I'm Al Horford, I try to get more money, like just flat out. You got to capitalize. Same thing with Marcus Smart. I mean, he's on a very team friendly deal. Why wouldn't he? So it's going to be really interesting to see how Boston handles these contract negotiations. They're not coming up right away, but their window is closing because of that, in terms of retaining all that talent.
That's true. They're not going to have forever, and health is not always guaranteed. You can ask the Milwaukee Bucks. I think a lot of people expected Giannis to maybe make another run, and I mean, we saw what happened this year. So just because you win it, or just because you're in the finals, just like the Suns last year, it's never guaranteed that you're going to be back next year.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, pivoting over to a topic that's been very hot, a player that was – thought he was going to be guaranteed in the finals every year after leaving LeBron James, it is Kyrie Irving. Right now, contract negotiations have completely, you know, stagnated. They're at a stalemate between him and the Brooklyn Nets, and now it's looking like Kyrie might want out. What are your thoughts as to the best landing spot for Kyrie Irving? Just some quick teams that have been mentioned with him. Obviously, the big ones. We have the Los Angeles Lakers, the Los Angeles Clippers, still Brooklyn, and also the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I would say for the Lakers, I don't really know what they can really offer Brooklyn, to be honest with you. Russell Westbrook, a 2027 first-round pick, and maybe some rotation pieces, to be honest. I'm not excited about that. If I'm Brooklyn, I don't love what I'm getting back. I'd almost rather let Kyrie go for just about nothing outside of that, because Westbrook is just going to be a filler piece, and I'm sure KD's not going to want to play with him. For the Knicks, I would hate this for him. Kyrie's not coming in with like a – he's not coming in to New York, the other New York team, without a 3 or 4 year like max guaranteed contract. And I just don't think he's worth it. 123 missed games in the last three seasons. And honestly, guys, I don't want to hear about the COVID mandate, because he was missing games before that, and he's been missing games after that for different reasons. He's just not a reliable star. And even though the Knicks need a point guard in the worst way, again, I just don't trust him to be available enough. Plus, they need a lot more than just Kyrie to be a title contender anyway. So as far as the Clippers, that to me was probably the most intriguing. I don't know how they make it work contract wise to have a Kyrie, Paul George, and Kawhi. I would be disappointed if they were to trade a Paul George to make a deal like that happen, because I feel like that's actually a step in the wrong direction. To me, though, honestly, Dan, I know there's a lot of speculation about Kyrie right now, but to me, this kind of feels a little clickbaity from Woj. It almost makes me feel like Kyrie kind of leaked this out to Woj to see what interest he could get around the league, because he's trying to kind of negotiate with Brooklyn. And I think Brooklyn's kind of playing hardball, because they know that Kyrie has proven to be unreliable and they don't want to commit long-term to him. And I think he wants that big max money deal that, to be honest with you, I just don't really think he's earned. And I think that this is just my inner conspiracy theorist. I think he definitely leaked some information that got to Woj. And I think that's how we got with these big market teams that are all of a sudden lining up to get Kyrie Irving. I just don't think the interest in Kyrie is as real as they're making it seem.
I'm not as conspiracy theorist, like on the same level as you are, but I definitely think that it got leaked for the wrong reasons. I believe that with the NBA season winding down, Woj and Shams, they ultimately were like, let's stir the pot a little bit. They pulled a Adam Schefter and just basically dropped something like a big bombshell report just to try to get interest going back in the NBA. I don't think it was Kyrie's camp. That having been said, though, I agree with you. You can't rely on him. He's missed more games than he's played for Brooklyn, all while being paid a very handsome salary. So if I were any team to trying to get him, I think that, you know, it's the Clippers. They're the team that makes the most sense, and they can kind of make it work. I mean, if you're Brooklyn and you're trying to get off this guy, you're willing to take some solid assets, why not take a player like Luke Kennard, Marcus Morris, and Reggie Jackson all for Kyrie? You know, like, that could easily work. So I just think that that is probably the most likely outcome if anything were to happen. But, you know, I'm calling it right now. I see Kyrie re-signing with the Nets maybe for like a 1-2 year contract for upwards of $40 million a year.
100%. I don't think teams have as much flexibility to make moves as Kyrie would like right now. I don't think any of these trade partners have enough to really offer Brooklyn to make it worth their while. And I don't know. I agree with you. I think he's going to end up in Brooklyn again.
But let's wait and see. Maybe, I mean, the clickbait clearly worked. We're talking about it, but let's wait and see what the end result is. Ultimately, you and I are aligned, though. It's just probably Kyrie back in Brooklyn. Brian, we have some very important news to cover now. In a couple of days, we have the 2022 NBA draft happening. Obviously, a lot of top heavy great players in this draft. I didn't realize how many guards there were in the lottery. It's pretty wild just to scope that out. So what we're going to do is Brian and I are going to give you guys our top 10 players for this NBA draft, who we think should be drafted at each position and for each team, and kind of give you guys our rationale at the very end. So I'm going to go through my list. First off, I actually changed my top three players, by the way. So you're going to be quite happy with that, Brian. First player to the Orlando Magic, I have Jabari Smith. After thinking it a lot more through, he's clearly like the top talent, just the most NBA-ready prospect. They need to get this right. It doesn't matter. They have to. They've been the laughing stock for a while. And if you look at their previous number one overall picks, they were clearly the best players in their respective drafts. Number two, I have Chet Holmgren. This just screams a Sam Presti move. Develop him alongside Alexei Pokuševski. Two really lanky, tall, white guys just balling out. That's going to be quite interesting to watch. Three, Paolo Banchero. No need to get into it. Number four, this is where I know I'm Brian's going to love me for this. I have a trade happening. I have the Sacramento Kings trading the fourth overall pick to the New York Knicks in exchange for the 11th pick, Mitch Robinson and Derrick Rose. And Brian, who do you think that the Knicks draft? It is none other than Jaden Ivey.
Wow. You're making a lot of Knicks fans' dreams come true right there with that one, Dan. Wow.
I mean, be honest. You'd give up those assets for that pick right away.
Do the Kings need a center? I guess Rashawn Holmes has got a lot of question marks. I would much rather give up an Alec Burks than a Derrick Rose. I just think Rose has a little bit more of that veteran leadership that we need, and Burks, meanwhile, is kind of taking up.
You gotta entice him, right?
I agree. And it's a shame because the Knicks won games they didn't need to win at the end of the year, and unfortunately hurt their draft stock, which is why now they have to give up more. But to be honest, when you're a team like the Knicks right now, I think they're a young team. They're not a piece or two away from contending. I think they're a little further than that. So I think getting a guy like Ivy, who's going to be explosive, who can bring the ball up the floor, I think that would be a home run for the Knicks.
Yeah,
and for the NBA. I think that'd be good news for the NBA too.
I agree. And then just looking at it from the other side of the argument, I just don't think that the Sacramento Kings need another guard. It's just that simple. And clearly, like, the number four pick should be Jaden Ivey. If not, you're going Keegan Murray. And again, like, Keegan Murray overlaps with Domantas Sabonis. I think that they just need, like, you know, some NBA ready players to kind of round out their roster. That's why I thought the trade made a lot of sense.
I agree. Yeah. Just be cautious for them, though, because Mitchell Robinson is due a new contract. So with that trade means that Sacramento is basically agreeing to probably pay him around $12 to $14 million a year. So they're going to have to suck that up.
Yeah, it's fine, right? Like, they would find a way to offload Richaun Holmes and then sign this guy if that were the case. So, like, I think that that made a lot of sense when I was doing the math. Fifth pick, I have Keegan Murray going to Detroit. It just they need a big alongside Isaiah Stewart. He's pretty undersized, and I just love the opportunity of him playing with Cade. It's really appealing. At the sixth pick, I have a player by the name of Dyson Daniels. I really like his NBA ready game. I mean, he did play for the G League this year, and I think that the biggest factor is that, you know, if you look at the Indiana squad, they have a lot of really good players, but not great. They have Tyrese Haliburton, Buddy Hield, Malcolm Brogdon. I think that those players are enough to kind of elevate your team. But, you know, after the fifth pick, there's no player that really stands out to me that's going to change life. And don't tell me about Shaedon Sharpe, because I don't like I at that point, you're basically picking Shaedon Sharpe over Tyrese Haliburton again. I'm not aligned with it. Just go with Dyson Daniels. He's a great oversized guard that can, you know, play the NBA right away and contribute on the floor. Number seven, though, I have Shaedon Sharpe going to Portland. They definitely do need to knock it out of the park. He's the most raw talent. Some people have compared him to Anthony Edwards. I just think that they have to go big or go home. And ultimately, either you trade the seventh pick for Jeremy Grant, or you go big and you try to take a player that can give you a winning impact right away. So it's boom or bust for Portland. At eight, I have Ben Mathurin, I believe. Just a great overall player for the Pelicans. A shooter. At number nine, Jalen Duren. Duren to the San Antonio Spurs. I think that he would back up Jakob Poeltl very nicely and do some of the things that he can't do very well. And then lastly, rounding out the top 10, I have Johnny Davis. Brian, overall thoughts?
Wow. Our lists were very different, Dan. I think we had some of the similar players, but our lists were very different. I'm happy you finally came to your senses and you understood Jabari Smith is going to be the number one pick, and it's the right number one pick. Shot 42% from three in college, and he's a big who can stretch the floor. Orlando shot 33% from three last year, one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league. So having a guy like that is going to definitely help them and their young pieces out. Holmgren fits like a glove in OKC, I think. It fits with what Presti wants over there. And then, you know, the rest of the top 10 is okay. I'll run through my list outside of that. So I have Smith at number one going to Orlando, Chet Holmgren at two, Paolo Banchero at three. I agree with you. He fits with what Houston's going to do, especially now that they've kind of cleared the way with Christian Wood being traded, which, by the way, we didn't even discuss, but I mean, kind of a crazy deal. Great deal for Dallas, in my opinion. I do think the Kings are going to trade their pick. I don't know who they're going to trade it to. I really hope it's the Knicks, but OKC guys, they have the number 12 pick in the draft. They have some young pieces that they can definitely use to potentially move up and snag a Jaden Ivey. I know that they already have a couple of nice young guards like SGA and Giddy over there, but you could just never have enough of them, right, in this modern NBA. So I could see that being a possibility. They've been rumored. The Pistons have been rumored, and so have the Pacers. So there's a lot of teams that I think are looking to go to four, and I think the Kings are looking to move and try and get someone who can help them win now instead of adding on another rookie. So we'll end up seeing what happens. But I do see Jaden Ivey being the number four pick, no matter who makes the pick. At five, I actually have Shaedon Sharpe. I'm a little bit higher on him than you are, Dan. I think he's an elite scorer to kind of pair with Cade Cunningham, make his job on the offensive end a little bit easier, can get his own shot. I think Shaedon Sharpe is going to go very, very high. He was pretty high coming out of high school as well. So we'll see what ends up happening there. I have Keegan Murray going at six to the Pacers. I think they need some more size, and he's one of the only real bigs that I think is really worth investing in this with this high of a pick. They obviously lost Sabonis, and they're potentially trading Miles Turner as well. So I think having someone like him will kind of help them out a little bit, and he's a better fit than some of these other guards. I think the Blazers at seven are going to trade that pick. I think they want to get someone who can give them more win now help. I think the Pistons are a potential trade partner to watch here. I could see Jeremy Grant. I know that's been a big rumor of being a really solid number two for Dame Lillard, and I think if they can make that deal, that's a win for Portland. It makes them better right now, whereas number seven is going to be a little bit more of a project, I think, in this draft. At seven, though, I have Benedict Mathurin. I think he's a 6'6 guard, versatile enough to kind of defend one through three, and he's got some strong workouts lately, so his name and his draft stock has definitely been climbing. I have Dyson Daniels at eight. I could see him going as high as you had him, Dan. Obviously, if you can land a look past his poor shooting numbers with the size that he has and the defensive ability that he has, as well as obviously having some G League experience already, he would fit perfectly in New Orleans with CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, and Zion. I think he'd make all of their lives a lot easier with how great of a playmaker he is. So I think that would be a rock star pick for New Orleans. At nine, I have AJ Griffin, a small forward from Duke, going to the Spurs. I think he's a little bit of a project, but I think he has a lot of the intangibles that Popovich looks for in his draft picks. 3-and-D type of guy. I think he would fit really well in San Antonio. And then I have Johnny Davis, much like you, at 10, going to the Wizards. So going to be an interesting draft, though, man. I can't wait to see it.
Two quick points. So I find it interesting that you think that Portland will trade the 7th pick to the Detroit Pistons for Jerami Grant. If that's the case, shouldn't they draft Jerami Grant's backup, i.e. Keegan Murray, in that scenario? I think that's interesting.
I would agree, but in my mock, I have Keegan going at 6. That's
what I'm saying. He should go at 5. That's my point.
Yeah,
if they do plan on trading.
Yeah, I would agree. That's a fair point.
But I think that the bigger point that I want to get to is that I think the player that's most polarizing in this draft is actually Shaedon Sharpe. There's just so much that's unknown about him. Like, to me personally, man, I'm very skeptical when a player hasn't played a full year. And like the last time we saw them was in high school. I mean, the player that always comes to mind, and I hate to make this comparison because like I don't want this for anyone, is Emmanuel Mudiay. And I mean, we saw how that turned out, right? Like, some people want to compare LaMelo, but LaMelo played professionally. Like, Shaedon Sharpe hasn't done that. So it's a very different dynamic that I'm always a little bit more cautious with that. So I'd rather, you know, if I'm a team, let me try to get every other player out of the way that I might need before him, unless you're like Portland and you have no plans except for Damian Lillard. So go big or go home. But ultimately, Shaedon Sharpe is definitely going to say, like, whoever selects him, it's going to say a lot about their plan and their mentality for the upcoming season.
I agree. But do you see Portland trying to trade that 7 pick and getting Dame some more win now help?
Oh, 100%. Like, to me,
I don't think they make that pick. I think they trade it for sure.
I think that they should trade it for Jerami Grant. I mean, I think that's what everyone's banking on. But if they do keep it for whatever reason and Shaedon Sharpe's still on the board, I think that's who you have to go for. I don't see any other option.
Yeah, and it's weird because like I don't know enough about his game, but I fear just because of his size and all that it could be a little too similar to CJ McCollum's role. That's my only concern. I think that they're going to need some more. They're going to need a wing player. I think like a real wing player, like 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", that can really help take the pressure off Dame in other aspects on top of getting a bucket.
Yeah, man. I think that 1 through 5, pretty set in stone for the most part for most players. It really gets tricky, you know, 6 and onward. So a lot of NBA teams are probably going to shock us. We might see someone do a dumb pick and like number 4 Kings take Jaden Ivey. Who knows? But it's going to be a pretty interesting draft. Brian, that having been said, it is the 5-year anniversary from the 2017 NBA draft. You know what time it is. It's time for us to redo that draft. You know, the lottery picks 1 through 15. Brian, tell us how you would do it now, knowing 5 years of history.
Yeah, so, you know, looking back at it, it was actually a pretty stacked draft class. So definitely an interesting list. For me, I have number 1, Jason Tatum. I think, you know, he was drafted number 3. I think he's clear-cut the best guy in that draft as of right now. Number 2, I would take Donovan Mitchell. Obviously, he was kind of a late lottery pick. I think you got to go with him towards the very, very top of your list. If not 2, then 3. At 3, I have Bam Adebayo. Obviously, we know his potential for the future and what he brings defensively. De'Aaron Fox, I would have drafted number 4. I know he hasn't had as good of an NBA start as a lot of folks have anticipated. I do feel like at some point Fox is going to have a career renaissance. I think he's not on the right organization, but that's for another day. Number five, I have OG Anunoby. I really believe in his long-term potential. I think from a two-way perspective, he's going to be a player in this league. And I think he's someone that if I could still pick over, I'd take him number five. At six, I have Jared Allen. He's someone that's really climbed up the list recently. He's a big that can give you some great, obviously rebounding and defensive stats. Seven, this is where it gets a little tricky. I have John Collins. Number eight, I have Lonzo Ball just because of his injury issues. Otherwise, I'd have him a little higher. Number nine, I have Kyle Kuzma. He's someone who, again, had a really, really good year in Washington this year. I think is kind of on the right trajectory. Lauri Markkanen is who I put in at number 10. I was almost a little biased because I hate his contract, but I also understand that his skill set really translates well to the modern NBA, and he's got to be one of the top 10 guys from that draft. Number 11, I have Josh Hart. Love his rebounding that he gives from his position. He rebounds really well for his height. This is where, again, you're getting dicey here. I go for Derek White at number 12. I know Danny might have him a little bit lower, but I like his ability to contribute. I wish he was a little bit of a better, more consistent shooter, but he's still one of the better players in this draft. At 13, I have Malik Monk. We've seen what he can do from a three-point perspective and getting a bucket. At 14, I have Luke Kennard. Again, don't love his contract, but I know what he can bring to the table from the three-point perspective, and you always need that on your roster. And then at number 15, someone who has not lived up to his potential at all, but I still believe he's young enough to turn around, I take Markelle Fultz there. And I know that you kind of have to take into consideration all the injuries that he's had when you pick that, but I think he's got to make that top 15 still just because of what he could still become.
Wow, we overlap in so many ways. It is crazy.
Of course. All
right, so top three, completely aligned with you, one through three. Number four is where it gets a little bit dicey for me, but you have to hear me out as to my logic as to why. So at number four, we had Phoenix drafting. I have Phoenix taking Jared Allen at number four. The reason behind that is because they get a center, they get it out of the way, 2018 draft comes along. Who do they take?
They would have taken Luka. Then you put Booker, Luka, and Jared Allen on it. I mean, in fairness, I mean, yeah, you definitely thought very into it. I'll tell you that.
No,
if you view it that way, yes, I would agree. In a perfect world, that everything lines up the same way, Jared Allen is.
But in terms of like top talent, one through three is clearly defined. Yeah. And then there's a steep drop off, and like you know, at this point, it's kind of interchangeable. Number four, though, I have Jared Allen. Number five, I have De'Aaron Fox still going to the Kings. I'm sorry, Foxy. I hate to do it to you. Number six, I have Lonzo Ball. I just love everything he does with his overall game. I will say I'm still terrified of his injuries, but I think that his all-around game, it's consistent with like taking you to a winning culture, and that's what Orlando desperately needed. Number seven, I have OG Anunoby. Again, just a great overall player. Definitely a steal of the draft for the Raptors when they did draft him in the mid-20s. Number eight, John Collins. Number nine, Kyle Kuzma. Number 10, Lauri Markkanen. Now, this is where you and I differ a little bit, Brian. At 11 and 12, I prioritized shooting over just overall game. So 11, I have Luke Kennard, and 12, I have Malik Monk. And number 14, number 13, I have Josh Hart. And number 14, I have Derek White. And lastly, to round it out, similar to you, I have the project Markelle Fultz.
Yeah, I mean, I can't hate that list. I still think you're a little high on Lonzo Ball, higher than you should be. Again, I'm taking that injury definitely into consideration when I say that, because again, I think you just have to. If you told me that, hey, Lonzo Ball is going to have a knee injury that is going to basically, we didn't think was going to sideline him for the season, and then it did, and now we're still expressing concern, and we're in the summertime, like it's a big red flag, and that's really the big reason why I had like OG over him and all these other guys.
I just think that I again, fair point. I think that Lonzo's overall impact to the game, I can't just like overlook that. That's my opinion. He does so much on every facet of the game: shooting, defense, ball, like facilitating, playmaking. I just couldn't overlook that.
That's fair. By the way, speaking of impacting the game in multiple ways, I just saw some breaking news from Shams that PJ Tucker of the Miami Heat is opting out of his contract, Dan. I just want to get your quick thoughts before we wrap up.
Yeah, I saw that news earlier. I get it. No, he just wants he's what slated to make $7 million. Yeah. I think he could easily command more than that in the market. So like he's got to do what's best for him and his family. So like, you know, go get your money. I would love to have him back. I told you I thought he was arguably one of the most important pieces coming into the season, but he needs to do what's best for him. So yeah. I hope to retain him.
It's a tough piece to replace, though. Tough piece to replace.
This, especially at the price we got him. So
yeah, agree.
You know. But anyways, guys, that about wraps it up for us. We are going to be watching the NBA draft very diligently this week, and then we will come back at you guys next week with our draft summary. And I think that's going to be pretty much it. Like after the draft, we might have an episode here or there before we get closer to the start of next season, you know, with, our fantasy projections and just what how we think the fantasy season is going to play out. But we really only have the draft and maybe a little bit of free agency to cover this year. So just, you know, episodes are winding down, guys. We're already at one per week. Don't be surprised if we go a couple weeks without talking here or there. But that having been said, we're still going to be on our Instagram and our Twitter. So just keep up with us on all our social platforms. And, you know, we'll still engage in case you have any questions leading up into next year's fantasy draft. I know some people draft really early, so we will be here to give you guys any support that you may need. Brian, do you have any parting words for the audience?
No, well said. Free agency is June 30th, guys, so keep that on your calendar. I think is probably going to be a pretty quiet free agency, but Bradley Beal, that could still be a potentially big piece. And now obviously we're hearing about Kyrie, so maybe there is more movement going on late next week than we thought. But yeah, draft, free agency, and then chill until late summertime.
Yep. So let's see what happens. But until next time, guys, make sure to follow the pod on whatever streaming platform you use, and take it easy.